Welcome to High End Client Acquisition Podcast. My name is Marian. I'm your host, and this show is here to teach you how to attract your dream clients on autopilot in 30 days or less. Each week, I bring you a guest or a strategy that can help you take your business to the next level. Don't forget, you can always get the episodes in your inbox or messenger at clientacquisitionpodcast.com. Erin, so first of all, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today. And people, you know, a lot of my audience, like, of course, they heard the intro. They probably got some of my emails that are coming up with this interview. But maybe for people that have no idea who you are and how you got started and the incredible things that you do today, do you mind to just give us the short version of the story on, like, from the beginning when you first got started with working with other speakers, entrepreneurs, and things like that, to just let us know what's your why and then how you got started?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here. So my story is kind of, you know, we all say, how many of you in here are doing the job you thought you'd be doing when you grew up, right? My dream job was to be a dolphin trainer. But what happened with that was I realized that I didn't need a marine biology degree. I only needed a psychology degree or a teaching degree. And I was like, well, I love people. Let's do psychology. So I went out, I moved to the Florida Keys, was a dolphin trainer for many years, loved it, but the pay was crap. It was like $6.50 an hour. So I knew that was not how I was going to make my living. And I feel like I kind of lived out that. I was like, okay, I did it. It was awesome. And now what's next? You know? And so with my psychology background, I decided to go to school to be a therapist. And as I was doing that, it was about the end. I was about 10 credits shy of my master's. And I was doing my clinicals and people would come in and complain week after week and not change. And I'm so results driven that I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. Keep taking people's money to just let them come and dump out their garbage and walk out, feel better, but not change their lives. So I literally dropped out of my master's program and was like, I'm going to be a coach, because if I at least put coach on my name, people will want transformation. And so I became a business coach. I was business coaching for 7 years. So I have the big solid structure of the background of like how to make money in this business. And then everyone kept seeing me speak everywhere and do all these things. They're like, how do you do what you do? And I was like, I don't know. So I had to kind of reverse engineer my gifts. And I started hiring the top vocal coach, the top speaking coaches, the top physicality coaches. And every time I sat in those rooms, I saw that it came through the psychology for me. What they were doing on stage that was working was because they were getting people to, you know, unlock different parts of their brain. They were getting them to have neurotransmitters, you know, all this flow of chemicals coming through their body, and they would deeply connect because the oxytocin was flowing and all these things. And I was like, oh, so it kind of made sense. I went to school to be a therapist so I could learn the secrets behind how to unlock your audience and how to move them into wanting to work with you so that I could become a speaking coach. So everything I do now is deeply seated into psychology, because it's why people are motivated, why people move, why do people shift and change, and how can you do that from the front of the room? So that's literally not the train I thought I was going to be on. I probably think I would still be a dolphin trainer today if I was to ask my childlike self. But the thing that wakes me up, my why, is I always knew I wanted to change the world, but I knew I couldn't just do it with my message and my voice. So I've been on a mission to help others change the world in their ways. And think about, if I help one person reach 10,000 people and I do that 10,000 times, think of the ripple effect in the world I can make. And whatever those people's messages are, they're changing the world in their industries and in their topic, but it still is the ripple effect that I get to have a piece of. And that makes me excited.
Wow, that's an incredible story. I didn't know the dolphin trainer part. So that's like really something new for me to hear about your story and the behind the scenes. So that's awesome. When I first got connected with you, I think, I don't remember exactly how, I think we started by talking about the podcast and a couple other events that were coming up. So I've noticed at the time that you were working with people that wanted to also land TED Talks. So do you mind to just give us a quick, also like a mini story on how did you get started into that and why you still believe that lending a TED Talk can actually help you grow your business after all, right?
So I had a girlfriend that was like, I want to do a TED Talk. And I was like, that sounds cool. Maybe I should do one too. Well, I didn't apply. I wasn't doing any of that. I was focused on my business and the clients I was serving. Well, when she got the TEDx, she asked them, do you have a speaking coach? Because my girlfriend's amazing at it. So they hired me to come and work with all 13 speakers, TEDx Bellevue College. And I worked from them from idea to ovation. So everything in that, how to craft the story, how to get it down to shorten this time, how to use nonverbal communication and vocal tonality and storytelling to really, like I said, unlock your audience. And so I started working with those people. Then TEDx Seattle, I was on the other side of the table. I was the screening committee. So everyone that sent in an application, I was a part of the screening committee, and I would see so many awesome ideas. Like, this is what I geek out about TEDx. Like, they talk about harvesting solar power from the moon and, you know, the tidal waves, or that, just like so many different things that I was like, I totally geeked out. I was like looking at all these people's interesting ideas, and I was like, there's so much out there. And so with that, I really learned what it took to apply and get on a TEDx. Since then, I've helped over 100 people either apply, which I have an 85% success rate if I help you craft your story and your talk and that kind of thing, and your application. I have an 85% success rate on getting people on stage, and even some of the most coveted TEDx organizers as well. But I also really love helping people understand how big that platform is, because it really truly is this global market, right? You can say, oh, well, I did a webinar. And if you did the outbound marketing, you probably have a global reach, but how much of a global reach? Being able to have a TED Talk and be placed on TED.com really opens up, and they all put it into YouTube. So that helps the generation of other people that are typing in your topic to find you. You know, it's so much easier to use someone else's platform that already has millions of followers and listeners than it is to start your own. So why not capitalize on that? And actually, even when you have your TED and it's up and going and you market to it just like you would any other product, you'll go up in the ranks of how many views. Now, the more views you have, the higher you rank on the TED platform as well. So if you want to reach millions of people, this is an opportunity to do that without having to work as hard as you would if you started it from scratch.
Wow, that's actually really interesting. One question that I want to ask you is, because I'm not like super familiar, how is the process of like, does like everyone in the country that lands a TEDx talk, not a tech talk, I guess, right? Because it's like, it's a huge difference in between.
Yeah.
Do all the videos that get recorded get posted on the YouTube channel, or just some of them?
Some of them. So here's the deal. They have a lot of rules around your talk. Like, you can't be promotional. You could say, in my book, I talked about blah, blah, blah. You can't even say what your book title is. So you have to be very strategic about it. I had a client say, she was just talking about being the first African-American openly gay head of the legal counsel for Starbucks. And she was talking about how Starbucks really helped her get her feet in the ground. Then she moved to Dell, and she had to move to a conservative part of the world where she did the same thing. But when she would say even Starbucks and Dell, she wasn't even promoting them. They made her take it out because it felt like it was promoting some company, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many rules around it. But when you use it right and you know how to seed very well, you can be able to get people to go find your book. Like, if I fall land on your TED Talk and I was like, wow, this is really awesome. You have a book? Let me go look it up. So I'll take your name and look for your book, right? I don't have to know what the book title is if I really am interested in what you said on stage. So it's really like, there's so many things around it, but when you, or if you go rogue, I had a client go rogue. We had no idea he went rogue, and he just did it on his own on stage. And we all looked at each other and even his business partner was like, what just happened? We're like, he went 16 minutes over time, which is like, you can't even edit it enough.
16 minutes altogether.
No, yeah, it's under 18 minutes, but most people get 10 to 12. To be honest, I don't think people realize that you get 10 to 12. It really was hard to edit it. He did things where he laid on the floor, which the camera crew wasn't ready for because that wasn't a part of the rehearsals. So those things can happen. So if you do something like that, you might not make it on there. If you piss off an organizer, they don't have to submit it to TED, right? So it's upon that that you really have to think about, okay, making sure you follow the guidelines that the organizer's asking, making sure you make them happy and you follow those rules, then that's when, of course, most people will be put up there, but some won't be.
Got it. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm assuming I just had not too long ago another guest on the show talking about, you know, the process of, you know, trying to really follow what the event planner is telling you in order to actually, you know, really kind of wow the audience, but at the same time, still wow the event planner, the organizer, because at the end of the day, right, like the audience can love you, but if the organizer doesn't love you after you do the presentation, that may really decrease your chance that in the future to be booked again. But all right, so let's maybe take a step back and understand how, like, what can you actually do? Like, I really want to ask those questions that maybe a lot of people would not ask. Like, let's go tactical. Let's assume, you know, a lot of people from my audience are speakers or upcoming speakers or people that are consultants or coaches, and they may aspire to land a tech talk or a TEDx talk, or even me personally. I've never given a TEDx talk. So let's assume I would like to apply, right? Like, let's put it that way to make it simpler. What could I do from a tactical standpoint to increase the chances to land? I know the whole hustle part, like, okay, I have to apply to a lot of events in order to increase the chances. I get that part. But then within the application, let's maybe reverse engineer that process. And if you can give us some tips there.
Yeah. Well, one of the first things you have to realize is that TEDx is for local experts to be showcased. So applying in Florida for me in Seattle is probably not going to be accepted as much. I mean, some of them will because they don't pay you. They don't pay for your flights. You don't get any of that covered. So that would be on you to get to rehearsals and do all the things you need to do. So the thing is to really think about your as close as you can, the couple states right around you within travel that's really easy for you. Here in California, of course, you could do all of California because it's an easy flight or easy drive. Thinking about that, because the first thing they want to know is the local. And the thing is, if it's a local thing, like if right now somebody was to apply for TEDx Seattle, I would say talk about the homelessness crisis because it's a local topic that's happening here that people want to know about and how that can affect other cities and other things, right? So using those kinds of things, thinking of what's top of mind for the people in the community makes the organizer happy because it's actually satisfying what they want, right? But here's the thing. When you start looking at the ones to apply for, and you can go to ted.com/events/TEDx, you'll see there that there's lists of all the countries, all the things. Search there, find some that are close. And some will have websites. So you can go to their website, you can look at a theme. Sometimes the organizer has a theme and then they look for speakers, or sometimes they take speakers and then create a theme by what they picked, the people they picked, right? So if you have a theme, stick to the theme. Show how your idea really relates to their theme, right? And it doesn't have to be like, so the theme is water. And you're like, okay, well, I'm talking about dog water. How does dog water have anything to do with water, right? Like, it doesn't have to be that succinct where you're saying that, but make sure you're really showing that. Biggest mistake people make in applying is not following direction. Now, I break the rules all the time. My kids even say I make my own rules. However, it's so annoying when it would ask for 2 to 3 sentences on your topic and I would get 2 to 3 pages. I don't have time. The last 24 hours when TEDx Seattle had it, 200 extra applicants came in the last 24 hours. There's 3 screeners. How long do you think that takes up? If we're reading 2 to 3 pages, I just want to put you in a box that says, nope, not applicable. Like, you go in the trash can, right? So there's a ranking system that they had me go through 1 to 5. 1 was like, this person has to be on the stage. 2 is, yes, this person would be amazing. 3 would be like, well, this could probably be good. 4 and 5's done, right? So I really was looking at that. And if you would send me, it says, send me a video, 2-minute video of you talking about your idea. And the video was locked because you were afraid to like have it out there on YouTube, that it was available for people to view. I can't see it. Doesn't exist. You didn't follow all the directions. You'd be a 4 or 5, right? So following instructions is really huge. Like you were saying earlier about always giving the organizer what they want. The instructions is exactly what the organizers want. So follow them to a T. I love that sometimes they'll give you only this many words or whatever the parameters, this max, because that makes people stay with that. But if you don't overdo it. It's not this rocket science. They want to know, A, is your topic interesting? B, are you the expert you say you are? And C, the video is usually like, how would you react to my audience? Like, what is your body language? How do you, if you talk like whatever that Bill, is that guy's? Okay, anyway, Bueller. They're not going to want to put you on stage, right? You're like, this is an amazing idea. And you're like, so I'm so excited to talk to you today about water. Right? They're not going to want to put you on stage, right? Because it's a lot harder to coach that than it would be somebody else that would be more animated about it and excited about it. So following instructions is huge. And really think about, you know, doing your research. So here's the other thing that I don't think people think about. If I wanted to do a talk on vulnerability, we already know Brené Brown has like 9 million views, could be way more than that now, on vulnerability. It's been done. My video will never be better than hers or be seen more because it's going to take a lot more to get to that. But at the same time, if I said, I want to debunk what she said about vulnerability, that would be interesting to people, right? So do your research on your topic. Make sure it hasn't been done yet. Or what is your new perspective on those? And if those ones have high views, the organizer likes that because obviously the topic went really well. They got lots of views. They want lots of views on their videos. They're going to want your topic.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. But it also, it's interesting because you said something at the beginning of this answer, where you said, you know, look at the team and then, you know, try to kind of follow, you know, whatever the team is. And of course, if you go, let's assume you apply, I don't know, what's the ideal timeline? Let's assume you apply 5-6 months in advance of that TEDx event to happen. And then you see around your state, let's say 3-4 other states, and then you apply at 20 events. I'm assuming every event will have his own team, right? Now, you can be an expert in 20 different topics. So how would you look at that? Like how, and of course you have to pick which one you align your message and your, maybe your story and the idea, but how much you go away, how much broader like you would go, right? Like for example, if I'm looking, taking myself as an example now, none of the TEDx talks will be about marketing, I'm assuming at any point in time, because it's not attractive, right? But let's assume it's about an immigrant story or if it's about something that I can relate to. And then I record a couple of videos around that to present the team, present my idea, how much broader you would go to still be aligned with what you're about.
Yeah, I would say don't apply if it's a huge stretch for you. I would say, because the thing is at the end of it, you want this to come back to the things that you are excited about teaching, right? Now, I'm not gonna do a TEDx talk about how to get a TEDx talk. It's also thinking about, okay, if I am an executive speaking coach and a speaking coach, I wanna know what are the things I can teach some psychology, like I've been saying, about how to unlock your audience and different things that then would go with making sure what is your topic, right? Like, so like my idea could be that maybe the topic is big leap, right? And I could say, all right, if the topic, the theme is big leap, I can say it's a big leap to come from, let me just talk to you, I'm a corporate trainer, and that kind of old school way of speaking, to then the big leap is, how do you deeply connect with your audience that really unlocks their psychology and really moves them? And so then you go like, oh, that's a great idea, right? So I have, and I'll give this away, it's on one of the things that we'll talk about at the end, but there's a training that I have that it's also like looking at your idea, is my idea worth sharing? There's a whole bunch of questions in there that will help you kind of figure out if that fits with what you want to move it back to, right? Because it's a lead generation as well. Like we said, I don't want to talk about vulnerability if I don't teach anything about vulnerability and it's not in my business, right? So finding those little places where you're like, I know I can seed it on my TED and then I can go over here and use that as material for my other thing.
Got it. No. Okay. So now it's much clearer. All right. So let's go next to the kind of to the next step in there. I remember you sharing with me a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago when we had another chat and you said, you know, a strategic step would be to look to not apply to the big cities and apply in a smaller city. Because it makes, you know, it makes things much easier because most likely not a lot of people apply in those smaller cities that, you know, like for example, if I take right here in Boston or the biggest one in Cambridge, you know, they'll probably get, I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands of applicants when an event is happening versus if I go to New Hampshire, which is just 40 minutes north, you know, probably not a lot of people would apply there. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So sometimes, like, you will have, so in TEDx Seattle, there's an audience of 2,500 people. So it's one of the bigger ones, right? So the way that these things work is you first get your license and you only get a small amount of people you can get in the room. Usually it's about 50. And then they want to make sure that you're, as an organizer, building that and building the brand. Because if you do a really crappy event at 50, they don't want you to have 2,500 to screw it up for, because their brand is on the line, right? So they start with smaller ones. Some are salons. Some are like one or two speakers. You know, some of them are, we're going to show TED women, the big TED stage, and we're going to live stream it. And then in between, we're going to have local people come up and do something, right? So it could be smaller. However, remember, if you're doing it for A, the credibility, B, you're doing it for the video that just says you've done it, no one's going to say, oh, well, TEDx Snoqualmie is so much smaller than TEDx Seattle. They're not thinking that when they watch your video. So it doesn't matter if you're thinking about it as the strategy for credibility. Now, your opportunity to speak at TEDx Snoqualmie over TEDx Seattle, huge difference, because actually there's no one in Snoqualmie, but there, you're not going to have as many people applying. We had over 600 applications at TEDx Seattle from around the world, right? So do you want to compete with that? Or do you want to compete with 200 people? So those things you have to think about. The best thing to do is find out if you know the organizer or someone who does. That is your in. We always say it's who you know, right? Figure out if you know that person or how you can get to know them. Reach out and say, I would love to find out how I can support TEDx Snoqualmie this time around. This is what I'm doing with TED Women, TEDx Women, or TED Women Bellevue, is I am an alternate speaker this year, because when I reached out, I said, how can I support your event? Can I invite people? Can I promote it? Can I volunteer? What would you like? And they're like, oh my gosh. And we would love to have you on the stage. We've picked our speakers, but we want you to be the alternate in case something happens. So can you be prepared for it? Knowing that I'm a speaking coach and do this, it's easy. But at the same time, they're like, and the next time you're going to be top of the list. So if you don't make it on this time, you're going to be the top of the list next time, because I served them. I asked what they needed. I stepped up to volunteer, whatever that was, so that now I'm connected to them and they see that I have a servant's heart and they'll want to ask me next time, right? So that's sometimes the thing you want to do, is if you see them there, then go buy a ticket, show up, find out who's in charge, find out how you can serve and be a part of the community, so that when you apply, you have better chances as well.
Got it. And you kind of a couple steps ahead, because that was my next question I was about to ask you, is, okay, let's say we go to the, you know, to the typical application process and we use the application and then we go through it. But then taking a step further, would you actually go and see who's the organizer? Because you can see that it's public information, like you can see it on the site. Would you try to look on LinkedIn and see if you have any common connections, or maybe Facebook or whatever the social platform that person is using, to try to actually connect with them personally?
And I did. So what I was at my event, I was jumping on a plane. So I was sitting first class and all of a sudden someone's like, oh, look, ladies, we should go to TED Women Bellevue. This would be so much fun. It's December 10th. This was like September 15th or something. And I was like, I wonder if they're looking for people. So I went in, looked at the organizers, looked them up on LinkedIn, found out who they were, messaged them. Then I went over and looked at Facebook. Is again, one of the ladies who put the post in our little group said, oh, I just talked to the woman. Here's her name. I'm like, would you be willing to do an introduction for me? She's like, of course. And because she's one of my clients. So she did. And that's how I sat down and had coffee with the lady who's the lead organizer. So it is about being smart about it. When you see things, and this goes with all speaking, if you are seeing other people at events and it looks like an event that your audience would be at, figure out, okay, even though it just happened because people are taking pictures at it, reach out, find who's the person is, find out how the event was from the person who attended, find out if they know the people, and then reach out to them. Like, do you do this yearly? Do you do this twice a year? When's the next event? How can I serve? You looking for speakers? Same thing. Do your research. Find the opportunities instead of going, oh, well, that would have looked great. I wish I should have spoke there. Instead of doing that, great, then do it next time. right? Do that due diligence.
That's perfect. And thank you for sharing that. So, all right, let's assume we now go to the application. We connect with the organizer. We finally land a TEDx talk. What's the main three tips that you would recommend anybody to rock those 10, 12, 15 minutes, whatever the time you get?
The most important thing that I think people miss out on is what's in it for the audience. Always looking at your idea, what you're presenting, how you're going to present it as, how is it helping the audience? Never about you anymore. After that, it's all about them. So the things I say, the deep ways to connect with people is the four parts of compelling communication is 50% is your nonverbal communication on stage. There are things we do because of the amygdala sending off all the chemicals like, I should be scared right now. Oh my gosh, this is the TEDx moment. I'm on stage. There's all these people. Ah, I could blow this. All that's happening. And so then you have all the adrenaline and all of the epinephrine and all of these things flowing through your body. So we do self-soothing things like grasp the microphone for dear life or put our hand in our pocket or cover up our body, pin our arms to our sides. These all exude not being confident. There's something they're hiding. So in your nonverbal, you have to have nothing to hide. Getting up there, raising your hand, showing that you have nothing, showing that you're totally vulnerable and you're here for them. And so when you do that, they go, yes, she's in alignment with what she's saying, what she's communicating, and how she's presenting herself. There's no misalignment, because the misalignment, we've all seen it. A speaker that's getting up there and is like, it could be simple as like, I am so excited to be here today, guys. Your body doesn't say you're excited. Your face doesn't say you're excited, right? So when you have that misalignment, people go, something's off, I'm out. And they'll pull the phone out and start scrolling. Making sure you're in alignment with your nonverbal communication and really doing it and really using the stage and doing it in a way that gets people, you're relatable, you're lovable. People are like, yes, she's all that. And she's so confident in what she's saying she is. The second one is your vocal tonality. It's 30%. Nobody understands this. Unless you go to a singing, speaking coach, vocal coach, you don't know that tonality is so huge. And they teach a little bit of this stuff in like Toastmasters, but not really. There are four parts of that, which is your pitch, your tone, your volume, and your pace. How fast or slow? When there's important words, you want to slow them down so people hear you. If it's the things in between the sentence, you can just keep going fast, and then you want to slow it down. Right? So pacing is huge. The second part is your volume. When you want to tell something really soft and secret, if you bring your voice and people are leaning in, listening and hanging on every word. And then when you want to actually resonate with the audience, when you actually use your voice, and you can even hear it here with the vibrations of my sound, I'm vibrating that sound waves into your body. You are literally resonating with me. And so if you want to resonate with your audience, using your volume and projecting your voice is how you do that. You have to do it well. The third is your pitch, how much air you have. So you could be like a Marilyn and sound like this, but it's not very credible, is it? That might be in a different place, not on stage. And the last is your tone, how high you go and how low you go. Now, I always say women need to drop their voice a little bit because men can actually hear us. Something I do deep with my executive females is you have to be seen and heard. You got to drop in so they can actually hear your tone because they've tuned it out. Now, when you use all of these and create a melody with your talk, like when I create someone's script, I do the tonality on their script so they practice it, is that you create a melody. Now, the melody, if you think about it, if I was to turn on the car stereo and we blasted out Vanilla Ice, we probably would know a lot of the words of that song, right? But you don't remember what you ate for breakfast because it unlocks the episodic part of someone's memory. So you become memorable way better than just like, that was great. I remember that. And 13% is your storytelling. Now, this is where you get the audience to choose you. You can share characteristics about yourself, and especially in business, this is important. If you share stories that show that you're smart, you're trustworthy, you're honest, you're an integrity, if you share stories like that, the audience gets to decide that about you. I don't have to stand up there and say, I'm so smart, I'm so brave, I'm trustworthy. My story tells you that. And when the audience makes that decision about you, then they are like, yeah, then they're more invested in it. You're more invested if I tell a story about it than you would be if I told you I am. So then in the storytelling, the most important part is how to communicate to anybody, what was I thinking, what was I feeling, and what was I experiencing in my physical body. If I said I walked outside and I thought, oh my gosh, it's so cold. I took a deep breath and it like hurt my nostrils because it was so cold outside. You automatically are in that story, right? You're like, oh, I've been there. I've experienced that. Because when we tell story, your audience is looking about how they relate to you. And when you relate to them, they get in their story. You're telling your story, you release oxytocin. When they are in their story by listening to yours, they release their oxytocin. And now you're bonded. It's the mommy baby chemical that we release. So you want to kill it on this? Those are the three places you spend the most time. The fourth part is that the words. 7% is your words. Words really don't matter. It's how you made people feel. So that is everything in what I teach. As fast as I can, the cliff notes, but that's how you rock. Any speech, any TEDx, that's how you do it.
Wow, like those were actually like super, like you just, even now when you just explained them, every time when you said, you know, number one, number two, number three, four, I actually thinking and I was getting into that state of understanding and feeling what the whole talk is about. So that's powerful. I hope everybody's taking notes of this, because you're probably going to see a lot of rewinding of this of this episode because of those, because they're like so straight to the point. I love it. So, okay, perfect. So we land the talk. We use this for now. How, because you, it's important how you gave us the percentages and like thinking about it, just 7%. And I'm assuming most of the people, at least people that apply for the first time, just focus, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe 80, 90% on the words versus, you know, the rest of the stuff, right?
Yep.
So, okay, when you apply the storytelling, you know, if you have a webinar, if you have a full keynote presentation, you have an hour to do that. When you have a 10, 12 minute presentation, it becomes a little bit of a challenge, especially for the first time. Do you have a tip right there to how do you take that idea and you apply these things? Like what is your...
Okay, so you can go and look up this person. She was one of my, she was the one I told you about that got me in. Her name's Mickey O'Brien. She did a talk about tapping into your superpowers. Okay, so you can go look this up. The beginning of her talk starts like this. Remember when you were like 5, 6 years old and you were sitting on a bed of warm grass and you're looking down at a patch of clover and you're looking for that coveted four-leaf clover. Sun's on your back and you're excited and you're just so excited to find this four-leaf. But what's so important about that fourth leaf? And she talks about how schools and everybody who's normal thinking process is in a box. But the neurodivergent people, people who are feelers, people who are empaths, people who may have a on a spectrum, right? There's all these other places of our brain power that we might look as weaknesses. They're trying to fit in those boxes, right? So the beginning story though, you were in your story, even if maybe you've never looked for a four-leaf clover. I mean, I've said that story. You could probably say that in India, they probably don't have them there or in the Sahara, but you get it. You are back to being a child. You feel the sun on your back. You are excited. Like you're like, yeah, I have a simple memory like that that I can attach to. That's all she needed in her story. It wasn't even her story. It was a story that she told to get you enrolled in the emotion of what it's going to be. And of course that theme then went through about how that, you know, how people are looking for, like it used to be this, oh my gosh, it's so special when you have four leaves, when you have something special about you. But when we go to school, it's like, don't be special, fit in the box, right? So I'd love for you to go watch that because you'll see that in that, and she does throughout talk about, well, I also went to a school where they told me, because I was dyslexic and dysmorphic, that I would never go to college. Now she's got her master's and she's teaching other kids and she does all this stuff. It's amazing. So you can add those throughout to make your point. Like, here's my idea. What if we adopted to look at the fourth leaf and the disability, with my air quotes, as a gift and really shift that perspective, and then uses parts of her story to say, I get it because I was one of those too. So really being smart about it. And in that, you have to be really succinct with your story. You know, there's so many times people give me this long story. I'm like, nobody cares about this. The audience doesn't care. Does the audience care it happened on a Tuesday? Does the audience care that it happened at your house? Well, now it does if your house is on the beach and you're talking about the beach, right? Like, so really that short amount of time makes you get really succinct with what is important for the audience to know that sets the stage. And so, because some people will go on and on about their story and they're like, why is that detail? Why do you have to tell that details? Those don't even matter. I don't care. Get to the point, right? So it really helps you get really clear on your message.
No, that's powerful. I guess it's like how you hook the audience to stay, to connect with you, and then how you make them feel that actually they can stick around for the entire talk and not just start scrolling to their phone. So that's, I think that's super powerful. Awesome. So what we like to do every single time with pretty much every guest that I have is we like to give the audience at least two action steps. One, it's a short term, something that they can do like tonight after they listen or watch this episode. And then another one that they can implement for the next 3, 6, 9 months, a year, whatever, right? And this can apply, and I guess just for the sake of this chat of ours, this could apply, I guess your tips can apply for the TEDx alone or for pretty much any other speech that you're gonna give, right? Like I can take your tips, like the four tips that you just gave us, and I can apply them to pretty much anything from a webinar to just a YouTube video to right, a 1 hour keynote or an entire day workshop. So let's start with, what would you tell somebody to do like tonight to maybe improve their chances to either land their next TEDx talk, or if somebody already had it, maybe a quick tip to actually keep the audience hooked or something like that, but something that they can implement like right away.
So the first thing that I love to think about is something I brought up yesterday, and something that Bo Eason actually taught me was, write down your top 5 favorite movies. And you want to know what stories and what underlying themes you have in your life. Look at those. So mine are this: Star Wars, Rudy, G.I. Jane, Field of Dreams. It's Star Wars. I think I said that. So it's the underdog story, right? Yeah, and I look at my life, I've been the underdog in so many ways that's what resonates with me. That's why when I watch these movies, I'm like, oh, that's my story, right? So knowing that that's your story, your audience wants to know that part, right? So looking at it going, okay, great. This is my theme. My theme is underdog. Okay. So right now, some of my business is really about helping women be seen and heard and taken seriously in a male dominated industry like tech. Guess what? Who feels like the underdog? Those women. Cool. So you start looking at the themes in your life and the themes that you're attracted to and say, man, there's something I need to teach about this, because it wouldn't be so attractive. I'm not watching violence, thrillers. I don't know, Jaws. You could make that all those up, because that doesn't relate to my story and to me. So really finding that for yourself. And that's the easiest way that I find, the quick, fast way of like, oh, wow, there is a theme here. And then when you also start doing that, you'll start to see the themes in your life going, oh, wow. In my life, I'm doing that there and there and there. I'm like, okay, there is something I'm here to teach about that, because you did overcome things, you know? And so teaching from those things that you learned when overcoming those things are now a part of your story, can be a part of your brand, can be some, it could be even the things you shifted to really teach. You know, I didn't think I'd be in corporate doing this. I've been working with entrepreneurs forever. And all of a sudden corporate's like dying for it. And then I get in and these women were telling me that this was their struggle. And so I was like, yes, there's something here I need to work on, right? So looking at that would be, I'd say, the immediate thing. The second thing is, I really suggest, I know that so many people think they're good at public speaking. Most of the people that got on my stages for TEDx were lead counsel for Starbucks, right? You think she knows how to speak and convincing? She learned so much from me. I had a woman that was the head of a tech firm who's been speaking globally for 20 years and learned so much from me. You don't realize the subtle nuances that are keeping you from your audience. If you're not closing 30% of the room into a free offer, to a paid offer, I don't care if you're not closing 30% of your audience on a webinar, stage, any of those, there's something off in your delivery. And you have to master that. If you're not willing to look, then you're not going to get any better and you're not going to improve your abilities. In my audiences, because I set the standard so high and build so much rapport with my audience before and during, that anyone I bring on my stage has a higher chance of selling. And in my whole event, I have a 95 to 98% close rate. Everyone walks out buying something. whether it's a ring light or a book or whatever, it could be something small, doesn't matter, because if that was all in their budget, that's all they could do, but they still wanted a piece of it, right? So if you're not doing that, you need to hire someone to figure that out, because it is important. I sat after speeches and people were like, that was so amazing, and it sold nothing. And I would just sit in my car like, What did I do? Oh, I'm such a failure. And then I think, oh, I got to change my story. I got to change this. I got to change that. Maybe I should change what I'm doing. If there's something off, it could be something really small that you don't know you're doing that is really like disconnecting from the audience, then you're just not going to get any better. So stop thinking you're good enough, you know, like, and just because I'm a coach and I get paid for this doesn't mean I'm pitching you, but literally, if you're not doing 30%, there's something off. So go figure that out. Hire someone that knows. That's truly like the biggest thing that ever changed my life was people said I was good at it. I didn't understand why I was good at it, but I hired three of the top people to learn from. And now I teach some of that stuff through my filter, what I've learned and the psychology background. And it's taken me to huge levels.
No, and I think that's really important for pretty much in any, doesn't matter what are you trying to improve, you know, from your health to your business, to your sales, to your everything. Mentors are important because, I mean, you just take advantage almost in a good way, of course, of somebody that went through that process maybe for 10 years and you're able to apply the same things that that person did. But it's, you know, it's something that it's a no-brainer. I mean, can you do it without? Probably going to take you 10 times more time and probably you're going to have to, you're going to end up losing more because, you know, you can always make more money. You can never take your time back. So I'm always looking at that. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. So if people want to learn more about what you do, to maybe go to one of your trainings or attend one of your workshops, like what's the favorite spot for you for people to check you out?
So if you go to Aaron Lohman Jack, and it's going to be in the show notes, aaronlohmanjack.com, I have free resources there. I have a whole webinar for free about how to get on stage for TEDx, how to prepare for your application, all that stuff. I have lots of things for places for you to play there, but that is the best place to find me. I have the Transformational Speakers podcast. So if you want to check that out, lots of free content. You also are one of my episodes, right? So check that out as well. I love to just give as much as I can. So any of my social media platforms, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, I provide so much. You have all access to most of the things that you could start applying, even if you had $0. So go get those things, start building it up, and start taking advantage of really finding out what those things are you need to do to convert more.
Awesome. And of course, guys, for everybody in the show notes, we'll make sure we list everything that Erin said, including the video that she mentioned just a few moments ago with her client that she rocked the stage at a TEDx talk. So we'll put all the resources in the show notes, her podcast, where you can check out some of the trainings and everything else. Have we missed anything? Do you want to leave the audience with one thing before we bounce?
Yeah. My thing would be, some people feel like they don't have a story or something to share. And I want people to think for a second. You have the cure to someone else's ailment, the solution to someone's problem. Whether it's, I've lost a parent and overcame grief. Whether it's, I beat cancer, right? Whatever that is, some of the darkest moments, some of your messiest days are the answer to someone else's problems right now. And you playing small, you keeping it to yourself because you're afraid of being criticized, ridiculed, and judged isn't serving the world. Stop that. Get out there, start sharing those things. If it starts with sharing it with a friend, then sharing with groups of people, just start sharing because there are people out here in the world dying for your solution. So stop playing small, stop not sharing it.
So Erin, again, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll probably do a follow-up because I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions after we publish this episode. So I'll keep you in the loop for this. But again, thank you so much for being here. We'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Hey, podcast listeners, I want you to know that I really appreciate your attention and I don't take it lightly. That's why each month we pick a lucky winner and we give away books, mentorship, software, courses, iPads, and other cool stuff.
The way to enter is go to clientacquisitionpodcast.com and sign up. You'll get all the details there. Talk to you guys soon. Take care.